This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 94.
Financial decisions are made by business leaders, not by finance leaders, right? But how do finance leaders make sure that decisions are made, hopefully in a progressively better way? Well, they give a logic and a language to business leaders. And that language is consistent across businesses and industries. And there are some nuances about whether it's more of a balance sheet driven company or a P&L driven company. But loss is loss, profit is profit, capital is capital. You don't get to second guess that or say, this year I'm having a tough year, is it okay if I capitalize it? That tends to be a short conversation. What's the analog for HR? We don't make talent decisions, right? We are heavy, heavy advisors to business leaders who end up with the accountability for making those decisions. So what's our role? How can we give business leaders the same kind of decision constructs, the principles, a way of making complex people situations manageable and actionable, because we give hopefully very well thought through concepts, but simple at the point of the delivery that normal human beings know what to do with. So I don't make many of the decisions in Prudential, but I still see myself as 100% accountable for the quality of people decisions at Prudential.
How can HR help leaders make better people decisions? Why is expertise in work the next big capability for HR leaders? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. I want to take a moment to thank this episode's sponsor, Deeper Signals. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessments platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. I'm a big fan of their assessments because they accurately assess personality, motivation, and competencies in just 7 minutes. But don't take my word for it. You can try Deeper Signals Core Drivers Assessment for yourself. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod. That's /future POD, and take the Core Drivers Assessment for free. Hey everyone, before I introduce this week's guest, I want to let you know that I am making a big announcement this Thursday. In fact, this is such a big announcement that I'll be releasing a short solo episode so I can give you all the details. So what is this big announcement? Well, I can't give that away today, but I can give you a hint, as the big news is about how I'm going to be doubling down on the Future of HR's mission of inspiring and developing the next generation of HR leaders. So mark your calendar for this Thursday, because if you're a fan of the podcast, this is one episode you will not want to miss. My guest this week is Lucien Alzarian. Lucien is the Executive Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer at Prudential Financial, a Fortune 50 financial services company. Lucien has over 30 years of experience in major international companies and has been CHRO at A.P. Moller Maersk, a global shipping and energy conglomerate, and Avon Products. Lucien has also been recognized as a fellow of the National Academy of Human Resources, which is the highest honor in our field, where he also serves as a director. He's a founding member of the HR 50 and recently concluded a 3-year term as the chair of board of advisors for the Center for Executive Succession at the University of South Carolina. Lucien is one of the best and most respected CHROs in the business, and in our conversation we talked about what he learned from an early career setback and how that's impacted his leadership style, why the fundamental role of HR is to help their business win in the marketplace, what qualities differentiate the best CHROs from their peers, how HR can use decision logic to help leaders make better people decisions, why the next big capability of HR leaders will be expertise in work, and what many HR leaders are getting wrong when it comes to generative AI and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. As you listen, drop me a line on LinkedIn or just say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Lucian. Lucian, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, JP. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for being here. You have been someone I've been wanting to have on the podcast for a long time. You know, you've had this really successful and impressive career. You've been a CHRO three times and now at Prudential for the past 7 years. You really know your craft. But what you told me, and I appreciate you bringing this up, is that early in your career, you actually had a moment where you thought your career might be over. And I wanted to know if you could tell us more about that, how you bounced back from that setback, and any advice you might give to next generation HR leaders facing similar challenges.
Yeah, I've got two thoughts on this. One is kind of the easy way out, which is you can learn from failures, but they don't have to be yours. You can learn from other people's failures. And of course, you don't wish that on anybody, but life happens around us. And so you can just, if you're a keen student of human nature and what's happening around you, you can learn enormously about people's successes and failures. Then onto the hard way, which is sort of doing it yourself. Yeah, I told you, JP, about an experience when I was literally 4 months into my first management job. It was a pretty technical job. I have a degree in modern history. I'm not a terribly technical guy. And it was a pretty technical rules-based job because it had to do with safety and operations. I knew there was a particular area of the code, as they call it, that I didn't understand. And I just hoped that I would never get confronted with it. And of course, life finds you when you do that. So I got confronted with this situation. I got it wrong. And the company that I work for actually told me that they were going to formally discipline me. And this is now 40 years ago. But as I describe it, I'm back in that moment, reliving it. And I literally thought my career is over before it had even begun. They ended up being quite benign to me and just saying, sort of learn and don't do it again. But I really did take that to heart. So what I took for myself from that is never take the path of least resistance. It's okay not to understand something. Go and surround yourself with people who can help you get the right answer, but don't wing it. And I guess the bigger impact has been just in terms of how I manage people. I'm really, really understanding of people who say, but people kind of make it up in front of me and you can tell they're taking the path of least resistance, it's not going to be experience.
That experience you really learned, like when you don't know something, you need to speak up. Say, I don't know it. I want to, you know, learn more about this, but be more humble about it and the fact that you want to learn and grow and that your expertise may not be there yet versus trying to pretend like you know it because you get called out and then, boy, it's a tough situation.
Yeah, never make it up as you go along because generally it ends in tears and generally they're your tears. It's fine to say, I don't understand something if you've done the work. It's not fine to say, I don't understand something because I haven't done the work. But if I have done the work and I can only get so far, then it's great to ask for help.
Well, it's great advice, Lucian. And kind of in that same vein, if you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice as you were starting your HR career, what would that be? If you could talk to the younger Lucian and share wisdom.
Well, the younger Lucian actually had a piece of wisdom, but it didn't happen until I was about late 30s. So here's how to save 15 years of self-inflicted pain. I was probably a very independent person. So I want to make an impact on stuff. I don't want to be over-controlled. I like situations where I can be creative and kind of do my own thinking. Early in my career, and this was at PepsiCo, I was really dedicated to, I thought they were going to make a good impact on the roles that I was supporting. But the punchline was, I was doing it myself. I really wasn't sharing any of that thinking with others in the organization. And so I ended up getting actually what was a really painful feedback experience from somebody who made it painful because they thought it was going to be the only way I was going to listen. And they're probably right. The message was, if you tell people where you're going, people can help you. You access different resources in the organization. And if people have your best interests at heart, they're going to look out for you and try to make it additive. It's not that they want to supervise you or correct you. That came to me in two pieces. One was you do that sometimes for compliance reasons because you figure out that's the only way you're going to survive. They told you to do it. Okay, I better get with the program. But then actually the second piece, which was the piece that was really beneficial, is once you start doing it, you actually have much more impact. You are accessing a lot more thinking and support around you. People do want to help. You end up making a bigger impact. If I could go back to the young Lucian, it's like pride of authorship doesn't matter. It's about the impact that you're going to make, and people can help you make a bigger impact than you can make by yourself.
That's a great insight. It's really about co-creation and abundance versus holding those ideas so close to your vest. Like when more people hear and know what you want to do or the work you want to have, the impact, most people get on board.
Yeah. Now I talk to people about, as a CHRO, we're stage left roles. We're not front and center limelight roles. If you want that, try and be a CEO. But one of my hallmarks of success myself is that if I've talked to my CEO, and sometimes it's two or three conversations, and then one day he's on stage or she's on stage, depending on which CEO I've worked for, they're saying something, it sort of comes off conversations we've had, but they've forgotten that it came from me, then I've succeeded because then it's theirs. This sort of humility about the impact it is the ideas impacting the organization. It's not the praise that you get. Our reward is in heaven. A lot of it is not on this earth. You
know? Well said, Lucian. Well said on that. Another thing I really admire about your career is that you are someone who I think has just been focused on what you call the fundamental truths of HR and remain constant. There is a lot of noise in our HR systems and in the marketplace, right? A lot of bright, shiny objects in HR, but yet you have really stayed true to the fundamental truths throughout your career. And I wonder if you could tell us more about what those fundamental truths are to you and how you think about that.
I really think it comes back to one fundamental truth, which is what's our role? Our role is not to do great HR work or come up with the next fad, any of that. Our role is to help our businesses win. If that's our true north, and we do that knowing that if we treat people properly, they deliver great performance. When they deliver great performance, our businesses win. That's why what we do is very, very noble work, because it really does bring together all of our values about how people should be treated with all of the outcomes that we need to deliver as business leaders. But if you were to sample a group of CEOs and say what made the difference for them between the best CHROs that they work with and the rest, I'd pretty much guarantee you they would talk about business leadership. This person saw themselves as a business leader first, who happened to have accountability for talent and culture and capabilities, not an HR person who was just doing good generic HR work. That to me is like the fundamental truth. And so I will quite often have these kind of existential debates with people about deep in your soul, like, who are you? When I ask you that question, is your answer, and you don't need to share it with anybody, but is your answer to yourself, I'm an HR person. I love to do HR work. I really enjoy doing HR practices. Or do you self-identify as, I'm a business leader. I happen to have accountability for talent and capabilities, but my fundamental drive is, how do I help this company win?
It's so important. And I think that is a question all HR leaders need to ask themselves. And it does come down to identity. I think you have to identify as a business person. I think James Clear in his Atomic Habits book is a great book. But the key takeaway for me when we talked about identity is, if someone says, I'm a runner, well, then they run. They think about running. They buy running shoes. They actually do the practice. So if you think about being a business person, that means that you pay attention to the business. You ask business questions. You get curious about how you make profit and what creates value. And I think that is just a fundamental piece. And I will say this, Lucy, and I give you the hat tip, because I was at Marc Efron's Talent, a Future of HR conference a few years back, and you challenged the room to answer that question of, well, how does HR create value? And my answer was okay, but you really said it best when you said, look, HR is here to make sure we have the talent and capabilities to win. And that stuck with me. And I have told many people that. And I will say that when I talk to folks and they say, what does HR do? I think that really sums it up so well. So thank you for that.
Thank you for listening. That's great.
Hey, everyone. After a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Lucian. If you are a fan of the future of HR, then you know that I believe the organization with the best talent wins. So how do you ensure that you are selecting and developing the talent that will help your organization to win? The answer lies in using a scientific, data-driven approach to assessing and developing your talent, and that's where Deeper Signals comes in. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessment platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. Why am I such a big fan of Deeper Signals? With Deeper Signals, you can accurately assess personality, motivation, and competencies in just 7 minutes. You can generate personalized action plans and development journeys that equip leaders, individuals, and teams with the insights needed to improve onboarding, help them grow, and increase their overall performance. And the best part, Deeper Signals is affordable, user-friendly, and scalable, making it accessible to organizations of all sizes. No wonder over 400,000 people from over 140 countries have completed their assessments, and companies like Caterpillar and S&P Global are loyal customers. But don't just take my word for it. You can try Deeper Signals Core Drivers Assessment for yourself. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod, that's future P-O-D, and take the Core Drivers Assessment for free. It's normally $65 per assessment, but Deeper Signals has agreed to give Future of HR listeners this limited time opportunity to try the assessment risk-free. So what are you waiting for? Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod, P-O-D, and complete the 7-minute core drivers assessment. I know you'll be impressed with the results. And with Deeper Signals, you'll have the scientific, data-driven approach you need to select, onboard, and develop the talent that'll help your organization to win today and into the future. Let's talk a little bit more about the best CHROs. You've got a lot of great peers and people you admire. Tell us more about what you admire from great CHROs. What do they do really well? And
I think some of it is what we've discovered, that fundamentally, not just they see themselves, but their colleagues see them as really equal business leaders. They own the success of the business and they happen to run an HR function. Clearly, there are character prerequisites around honesty, integrity, truthfulness, authenticity, all of that. That to me are kind of table stakes. I think one of the distinguishing factors of the best colleagues that I really admire is courage. A lot of people are smart enough to know what the right answer is. There aren't many that have the courage to stand their ground and say, no, 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 this is the right thing to do for us, particularly when the wind is blowing the other way. And sometimes when your CEO or colleagues want to go in a different direction, you've got to have skill around how you do that. And you've obviously got to have communication or alignment ability, but the fundamental courage, the point of view around this is the way that we should be going, and I believe strongly in that. I think that and the business leadership are the two most distinguishing characteristics.
I would think you can learn the business. You can become a better business leader. You can study that. On the courage side, do you feel like that's something you can learn or you get better at with experience and age? How do you think about that piece?
It's a great question. I think you've got to have the courage to try it the first time. I think what you find is that it's never as bad as you think it's going to be, that actually people respect you for it, and you get into more of a virtuous cycle there. It doesn't mean you're any less nervous every time it happens, but it's a way of your body sending you signals that I'm in the right place, I'm doing the right thing. So you grow your self-confidence, your self-assurance that I'm on the right track, I'm here for the right reasons. One of the great truths of what we do is, in order to do our job, sometimes you've got to be prepared to lose your job. But when you act with that kind of conviction, you never lose your job because it's actually what people end up respecting you for. So it sounds a bit sort of scary when you say it, but actually when you act that way, you do much better work. You make a much bigger impact. You're actually heightening your ability to thrive in the job.
Yeah. And I'd probably add, you're being more authentic that moment because you're really saying, I've got a point of view on this and I need to express it. And yep, by not expressing it, you're actually hurting the organization, but it doesn't make it easy to do. I think that was really well explained, Lucien. How do you see the role of the CHRO evolving over the next 5 years or so? I mean, the role's really changed. It feels like we've had really a step up and elevation of the role since the pandemic, that people are respecting what we do more so than maybe we had prior to the pandemic. I could be wrong. But how do you see that and how do you see us evolving over the next 5 years?
Actually, not sure the pandemic changed anybody's point of view. I think it amplified people's point of view. So those that had the right kind of expectations of HR leaders, if they used to get 100 cents on the dollar, they got 130 cents during the pandemic. If they only ever expected 20 cents on the dollar, they continued to get 20 cents on the dollar. So I think a lot of it is around your expectations of yourself, but also the environment that you're in and their expectations of you. One of the pieces of career advice I'd give to anybody on this call is put yourself in a place where it's not handed to you on a silver platter, but make sure you're in a place where you can make the kind of contribution that you want to make. May not be on day one. You may need to learn a lot and bring people along with you, but if they just fundamentally see HR as an administrative function that they don't want any more from, go practice HR somewhere else where you can actually have the impact that you want. So back to your question, my premise is the fundamental truth, the role is probably pretty similar, but we're now playing in a different environment. I'm a little bit leery of the this generation has seen more change than any generation in the history of the world. I don't think that quite sort of stands up to scrutiny, but certainly we're playing in a different environment in terms of technology has finally become scalable, actually can help us take some of the ideas that were just a gleam in the eye. We can now make them really actionable and scalable in organizations. Clearly, the whole social environment, the political environment in which we operate is much more visible, much more prominent in terms of the role, the expectations of employees, the fact that business is one of the few really trusted institutions left in society. And with that comes an obligation of when to speak and then the judgment about when not to speak. I think the notion of the organization and how and where work gets done, that is becoming in a good way more blurred now. So you're looking much more at the whole work system than you are just the particular organization that you work in. So we still need to take that environment and figure out how we're going to help our business win. And we're still going to come back to the judgment, the intellectual curiosity, the ability to hopefully see some things that others don't see and have the communication ability to help them see it and get excited about it. But I think we're playing on a bigger stage now. And I think we have more colleagues who are sharing the experience of it being done well. And I think that's a positive because I think business leaders are now learning to expect more of us. And I think that's great. Anytime you want to get good at something, play with some people who are better than you are. I think that's equally true professionally, that go and work for people who expect more of you than you think you can deliver, but know that you can deliver it.
That's great. Great advice, Lucien. You've also talked a lot about the importance of decision logic in HR, similar to what we see in finance, where there are ROI calculations, right? There's calculations for a lot of things that provides decisions on how we make financial decisions. But yet, we haven't done that as well in HR, but you've got this concept around decision logic and how that can help HR to help business leaders make better talent and capability decisions. Tell us more about what decision logic is and how you think about it.
Yeah, let me start by saying this is not mine. I learned this from John Boudreau. John's one of the real teachers in my life, that just two or three ideas that I really did benefit from him. But Let me spend a minute on the finance analog, because I think it does help them understand the HR version of that. Financial decisions are made by business leaders, not by finance leaders. All right. But how do finance leaders make sure that decisions are made, hopefully in a progressively better way? Well, they give a logic and a language to business leaders. And that language is consistent across businesses and industries. And there are some nuances about whether it's more of a balance sheet driven company or a P&L driven company, but loss is loss, profit is profit, capital is capital. You don't get to second guess that or say, this year I'm having a tough year, is it okay if I capitalize it? That tends to be a short conversation. What's the analog for HR? We don't make talent decisions, right? We are heavy, heavy advisors to business leaders who end up with the accountability for making those decisions. So what's our role? How can we give business leaders the same kind of decision constructs, the principles, a way of making complex people situations manageable and actionable, because we give hopefully very well thought through concepts, but simple at the point of delivery that normal human beings know what to do with. So I don't make many of the decisions in Prudential, but I still see myself as 100% accountable for the quality of people decisions at Prudential. We do that through the decision constructs, and then we do that through the advice that we give leaders. You just need to keep on getting better and better at that over time.
Well, I love that piece around that we take accountability for the quality of the decisions.
Absolutely.
That our leaders are making. And I don't know if we do that enough in HR. There's sometimes where, in great HR organizations, yes. There's sometimes we're like, well, gosh, we can't stop them. That leader made this choice. Hey, they're making bad calls. We sort of don't take enough accountability for saying, well, did we make it simple? Did we provide a structured interview guide? Have we thought about the 3 to 5 critical experiences or outcomes for this role, allowing them to use that as a judgment or a filter, for an example? And that's what finance does. You're right, really, really well, because they've laid out and have very consistent rules. So it's easy for people to understand, was that a good decision or not a good decision? Is there other areas, though, Lisa, you kind of could bring to light around that decision logic that makes sense where you've helped that quality of decision making?
Well, I think it's true of talent. It's true of the way in which we build capabilities in companies. It's true of our approach to culture and diversity. Anything that we do, we hopefully bring some very good complex thinking so that we really understand kind of the root cause of issues, and we've got to demonstrate that both the intellectual curiosity to kind of get to the underlying cause and then the business judgment to know how is that going to make a difference to the business. But ultimately, then we've got to hand that over in a way where it's easy for a normal human being to take those constructs and apply them to the issues that they're dealing with today and make sense of it without needing a PhD there to interpret it for them. I would say HR functions struggle more often because of the complexity of not their thinking, but their delivery. They probably fail more because the stuff is too complex rather than wasn't thought through well enough. But I always love to come back to, you know, these are normal human beings. They're not HR experts. They don't want to be HR experts. But we need them to run businesses and make great decisions. So how do we make it as simple as possible? Now, if we've done that and they continue to make bad decisions, now we know what the issue is.
That's great. Lucien, you've also said the next big capability in HR is expertise in work. Can you unpack this idea and explain why you think this is so critical for the future?
I'll be honest, JP, I'm still working this. I feel like I'm sort of getting closer to what I'm searching for. But if you think about the thread that runs through the last 3-4 years, the whole debate in the pandemic was, for the first time really in my career, we could separate work from the workplace. All right. Before, those two were inextricably linked and it was a bit of a straitjacket. But we found, through force of circumstance, with the pandemic that we could separate work from the workplace, and that unlocks a whole set of creative possibilities that we didn't have before. But think about where that debate went. It went into, where is the work going to get done? In the office, not in the office. And when is it going to get done? 2 days a week, 3 days a week? Became pretty reductionist debate. Very, very little debate about what's the work. What is the work that actually drives the competitive advantage of the organization? How good do we need to be? There are some aspects of what we do in companies where good is good enough. We just need to be as good as everybody else. If we do it badly, we're going to lose. But if we do it better than others, it isn't going to cause us to win. There are other areas where we need to be better than those that we compete with, because that's our source of competitive advantage. I've become really, really interested in HR as a function has become expert in many, many things that surround how work gets done in organization, but nobody's expert in the work. Some of my colleagues say, yes, we are. We've got job design and all of those skills. Yeah, we got them, but nobody uses them in a really sort of thoughtful way. So I'll give you an example that I think really reinforced my passion around this. So last week, my leadership team and I, HR senior leadership team and I, we went to Silicon Valley and we met 12, 15 startups that are looking at how they can apply technology to people and talent issues. They all underneath it took a consistent approach, which is they look at a problem, they deconstruct it into its component elements, they redesign it, and then they apply technology to it. I think that's where we need to go next in terms of the capabilities that HR brings to major changes in capabilities. If we're doing a huge finance transformation at Prudential, which we are, what is the best, the optimized combination between the work that really makes a difference, the skills and talent that our people have got, and the capabilities that technology offers to do that work very, very differently? I just think that's a new and interesting place for us to go.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. I love that you're really digging into what the capabilities are of the work, because I think it is challenging. I think part of the conversation we had after the pandemic is that it's actually hard to have conversations about the work because it requires you to double, triple click. Or in your instance, talking about the technology companies, they're using first principles where they're breaking down everything in the component into the assumptions around that and then rebuilding that back up. And that requires HR to have a curiosity that some of us don't frankly have, not only about the business, about ourselves, and challenging how we give value. I mean, I think that's the other piece too. What I think I'm hearing you say, but Lucy, and correct me if I'm wrong, is we can have a huge amount of value in terms of redesigning the work to be more efficient and drive competitive advantage, but it's something we have not really built a total skill for, or only a few people in the HR organization really have that skill. Is that summarizing it, or how would you add to that?
I would just say nobody in the organization actually, there isn't a chief work officer. Now, I have a chief capability officer, which is really my version of chief work officer in disguise. It's probably easier for business people to understand chief capability officer. But she is taking this logic now and really trying to get to the capabilities are basically the work that the organization needs to do in order to achieve its plans and strategies. And I think this is quite exciting. And of course, we'll only get to the right work if we, again, come back to intellectual curiosity to, well, what is the right work? Business acumen, what's the right work for the business? How good do we need to be? How good are the people that we compete with at this particular area? So it really is a sort of self-reinforcing system here. A lot of what I talk about are different examples, but they come back to the same core characteristics, I think, of great HR work that I've admired in some of my peers.
Absolutely. I think that's really the trifecta, the business acumen, the capability building, the curiosity, the innovation piece, having impact. Well, we probably neglect to not talk about generative AI in this conversation, since that's the hottest topic in HR. Yet you have been clear that HR's job is to not to deploy technology, which I think is a great line in the sand we need to draw. But tell us about how you're thinking about generative AI and its impact, how it's going to impact our organizations, and specifically how you think it's going to impact our role as HR leaders.
Yeah, I've been on my own learning journey, JP, ever since ChatGPT kind of exploded onto the world. I was very lucky. I was at a CHRO conference that Kathleen at Microsoft pulled together. And so I got exposure to that very early in its launch into the world. And I've been trying to understand that and obviously think about what are the implications for my own company. And I think as a CHRO, we come at this in three ways. One is, what does this mean for our enterprise as a whole? How does it enable us? Does it threaten us in any particular way? And Gen AI has both a lot of promise and some potential perils if you get it wrong. The second level is clearly to encourage my own function to be explorers and curious about how can this help us make a bigger impact on our company. And then just personally, you know, how much am I using the tools and getting my own personal experience? And so on that third one, I realized that I'm not doing as much as I should be doing. So I've actually enlisted a reverse mentor from our technology organization, who's a young, brilliant guy who's helping me understand what is really kind of a different set of tools and language. The realization came to me, though, I've probably been to 15 sessions over the last year, externals, seminars, CHRO gatherings, and only came to me just recently. They're all about, here's generative AI. What are we going to do with it? It's the wrong question. The real question is, what are the problems that we've got to solve for our business to win? And then how can I use the benefits of all of this new technology to solve those problems? And it sounds like a bit of a semantic difference. It really isn't, because one is about, how do I help somebody to launch a technology? That's not my job. My job is to understand the problems that my company's got, help solve them so that we can be more competitive. I'm trying to take a much more sort of applied version of this now as we think about it. Some of it is around now we as a group of senior leaders getting up to speed so that we can share common understanding about what are the potential benefits of this, what are the things that we need to watch out for. And then some of it is just making sure that we are very forensic in terms of, let's use this technology where it makes sense, not just for the sake of technology. One of the things I've realized in my own exploration is that a lot of what we, and by that I mean myself and many of the peers that I respect, a lot of the use cases are actually AI, not generative AI right now. And it's almost like we needed to go explore generative AI to come back and appreciate how much promise there is in much more sort of the machine learning AI tools and technologies that have frankly been around for a long time. We just didn't understand how much they could offer to us. And then there is some new frontier that comes with the generative side. But I think it's probably 80-20 for me. 80% of the benefit is actually in core AI and 20% is in the to-be-determined generative stuff.
Really helpful to hear your perspective on that, Lucien. And I love the fact that you're kind of challenging your team to be explorers and that you're doing reverse mentoring. So kudos to you. My last question for you, Lucien, is what is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit here. I'll go back to where we started, which is, what's the core truth of HR? And I'm going to use something that really put HR on the map, probably 2002, 2003, whatever it came. It was the war for talent. And that really unlocked a lot of kind of, it gave HR permission to play at the most senior levels of the organization. Really impactful. It was the wrong title. It should have been the war with talent. That to me is the future of HR. Clearly, we need to get the talent, but it's what we do with the talent that's going to make the difference for our companies. And that to me is still untapped areas for a lot of us and just has enormous potential for us.
Lucien, thank you so much for bringing up the war with talent. I love that. We've learned a lot today, and I think we all can take away that our role is to build the talent and capabilities to win. Thank you so much for being on the Future of HR. It was a true pleasure.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Lucian for sharing his incredible insights on HR's fundamental truth and why becoming an expert in work is HR's new capability. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with a special double episode where we'll be joining forces with the popular podcast Modern People Leader, also known as MPL. I've long admired Daniel and Steven and what they've been doing in their podcast, and they've admired what we've been doing over here at Future of HR. So we decided that we would interview each other all in one episode and share with our respected audiences. This was a fun episode, and not only will you get to know more about Modern People Leader, but you're going to get to learn a little bit more about a few things I've been up to and working on. This was a great conversation and one you won't want to miss. So thanks again for listening to Future of HR and being part of our community.